Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Weintrich. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Yourself?
Pretty good. Fairly thirsty.
Always. It's our job.
It is our job.
I like my job.
Dozens, hundreds, thousands of choices these days, oh, yeah. You know, at a bar. But I mean, I often find myself gravitating towards really just a couple of classics almost always,
you know. Yeah, I mean, my day-to-day repertoire is probably about 12 drinks,
you know, like, yeah, maybe I'll try, you know, we'll go to a new place, try one of the original cocktails, then probably have, you know, one of, you know, a classic. Mm-hmm. And one of those, I think, probably for both of us and a lot of the folks that we hang out with is one of the legendary cocktails, the Sazerac.
I mean, oh my god, yes, the Sazerac is kind of the most intense cocktail, along with the dry martini.
Yeah.
You know, these are yeah, the two. I used to always say that the dry martini was a straight line, in that a straight line is the shortest distance between two points.
Right.
And dry martini, drunk and sober,
right,
or sober and drunk,
right,
shortest distance. Sazerac, just as straight.
Absolutely.
It's that same line. It's, yeah, like, bam. You know, it's a drink not to be trifled with.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's a like the martini, it's quite a beguiling drink.
Yeah.
It has very few ingredients. I mean, if you tasted it and you didn't know what was in it, you'd probably pull like 10 different bottles and ingredients off the bar to make it.
Yeah, it's very complex. I would use a spoonful of thick gum syrup, like, yeah, rich, simple syrup,
yeah,
maybe with gum arabic if I have it.
Sure.
So that's the fancy touch there.
Or, you know, two-part sugar to one-part water.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or you can muddle in a sugar cube in a bar spoon of water. But I like the thick syrup in this. Maybe four dashes of Peychaud's bitters.
Right.
A dash or two of Angostura. 2 ounces of good strong rye.
Yeah.
Preferably 100 proof rye. Stir it up, strain it into an absinthe-rinsed glass.
And, yeah, that's the difference between, like, an old-fashioned and, yeah, a Sazerac, right? Is that one key thing, right? That you put in just a swirl of absinthe, you, like, yeah, rinse the glass.
Exactly.
And you don't want so much that you're even, like, literally...
No, you just want a hint.
You're shaking it afterwards just so, yeah, that any excess comes out.
And you want it so that as you bring your nose to it, you smell the absinthe more than you even taste,
exactly,
it.
Exactly. And that makes all the difference,
yeah,
between... I mean, I love old fashions and I love Sazeracs. If you didn't know how they were made, I'm not sure you would realize that they were so closely, yeah, related, their recipes.
I mean, the old fashioned has that ice in there to,
right,
to slow you down.
Sure.
You know, some of us regard that ice as an obstacle. Something
well
to be overcome.
One. Well, yeah, needed one.
Well, yeah, maybe. You know, you stir up the Sazerac, basically the 1880s improved whiskey cocktail, which was,
right,
whiskey, bitters, sugar, stirred and strained into a glass, you know.
Right.
And down, I mean, the hatch it goes.
What you just said sounds very standard and,
yeah,
perhaps bordering on the obvious, the boring, but is actually quite a revolutionary statement.
Yeah.
Because most people, if you ask them about the history of the Sazerac, that's not the answer that you get. I mean, it's...
Oh, boy.
I mean, what you have said literally blows up hundreds of articles, some of them I may or may not have written, hundreds,
same,
of books, plenty of expert, you know, speeches, bartender rants, you know, menus. I mean, that is basically rethinking what we all think about the Sazerac.
The Sazerac is a huge historical problem,
yeah,
in the world of drinks,
yeah,
you know, which is funny because it's such a simple, straightforward drink.
Right.
But, oh my God, you get into fights over this one and mythology is at its richest, partly because it comes from New Orleans, a city that's already heavily, yeah, mythologized. But
well, what's so upsetting is that I think we don't know that much about most cocktails, right?
Right.
and most cocktails have no histories and we don't know anything about them. For the Sazerac, it was like a slam dunk. Yeah. Here's all of the history beautifully tied up with a bow and presented. And basically, it's all wrong.
Yeah. That's the problem.
And in fact, there are probably 3 or 4 different theories about its histories, which you wrote a very thorough article a couple of years ago about it. And you can obviously go down the rabbit hole about some of the different theories. But the main one is that it's a, you know, it was invented in New Orleans. It originally used cognac. Cognac was swapped out for rye whiskey at a certain point.
This all goes back to this guy, Stanley Clisby Arthur, who was a photographer, a naturalist, an opportunist,
right.
A guy who knew his way around a federal grant, et cetera, et cetera. And he was from California. He moved to New Orleans. He wrote children's books and took pictures and became the Louisiana State Naturalist.
Of course.
And then he started writing history books,
right.
Because he had access to the archives. And he wrote this offhand book that he just kind of threw out there called Famous New Orleans Drinks and How to Mix Them.
Which you still see
prominently in 1936.
Displayed in New Orleans to this day, you know, antique bookstore
and
windows.
He was not a professional historian.
No.
But it was the only book they had. It was
right.
It was the first American book to tackle like the history of drinks. So it was really important. And for the most part, he did a good job. But, you know, the information available to him was mixed, and
when he's able to put together about 4 different half-truths into one amazing story, which then causes people like us an innumerable problems in the future. Like, I mean, it causes all types of problems for future historians and writers. I mean, one thing he posits is that, you know, the word cocktail itself comes from people using, like, eggshell cups, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, egg cup called a coquetier.
Right, and there's like literally no proof that
And he says the cocktail's invented in New Orleans where it's actually not.
And then, like, you know, that the cocktail comes with Antoine Peychaud, who actually is related to our fellow Daily Beast contributor, Philip Green, and, you know, his family flees Haiti, arrives in New Orleans. That is true and sets up ultimately what becomes a company that makes Peychaud's bitters. Unfortunately, Antoine turns out to be a baby when, you know, he's leaving Haiti.
The cocktail first is in print.
Right. Yeah, it's just it's none of it.
Possible.
I mean, the problem is like...
Unless he was a very precocious kid.
Right. I mean, we had a great story from Philip a couple of years ago, you know, where, you know, at first he was like, oh my God, I'm related to the guy who created the cocktail, you know, like the Sazerac and possibly coined the word cocktail.
Yeah.
Like, what a score. As a modern cocktail writer, it's like the 6 stages, right? Where, like, you know, jubilation, and then, like, you know, as the more he looked into it, the more troubling it was because nothing added up. None of the dates worked out. None of the claims could really work out. And that story, you know, has so many holes. I think you said it in your story. It has, you know, that book has so many holes. It has more holes than a Hawthorne Strainer, which I think is...
I thought that was a pretty clever witticism.
I think it's pretty appropriate.
At the time, I was pretty pleased with myself. I'll tell you that much.
You had several Sazeracs.
Yeah, I did.
But it's true. I mean, none of that really adds up. And unfortunately, it's one of these things where it's not only known by bartenders and drinks writers, but kind of the whole city of New Orleans has embraced...
Yeah.
This version of events, which doesn't really exist.
The problem with it is the whole story puts it back to like the 1840s and the Sazerac Coffee House. And,
which did exist. Near Canal Street.
The problem is, as a historian, is you look for evidence of this theory that still holds on with such tenacity, says that the Sazerac cocktail was invented by Peychaud, and then he made it at this coffee house, the Sazerac coffee house, and it was their house drink and popular from the 1840s all the way, you know, on. And you start looking into this and you find any number of mentions of the Sazerac coffee house. Detailed history can be constructed of this place. And you start to notice after a while that nobody ever mentions the Sazerac cocktail.
Right.
And you're going, huh. Now, for instance, I find the records of when they opened a branch Sazerac bar. Right. So they had a spinoff. And nobody mentions in the ad, come here for your delicious right. Sazerac cocktail.
Right.
And then the branch splits up, the company splits up. The original owner doesn't say, I'm the only guy who knows right. how to make the real Sazerac. Nothing like that. The bar closes briefly. Nobody says, oh, no more Sazeracs.
Right.
And it goes on and on. And after a while, you kind of got to think, okay, this dog just isn't barking.
Yeah.
Why is that dog not barking?
Yeah.
There's always two reasons.
Right.
One, the dog's not barking. Two, there is no dog.
Exactly. And what does show up is basically the same recipe. It's just not called.
Yeah, Sazerac. And it shows up elsewhere.
Right.
There's also Sazerac cognac.
Right.
So Sazerac cocktails show up elsewhere because all that was a cocktail made with Sazerac cognac.
Yeah.
And you have that all over the country.
You know, like a lot of cocktails, the recipe for the Sazerac itself is not that huge of a jump.
No.
Right? It's not
the absinthe rinse is
right.
the only thing. There is one secret ingredient, it turns out. This is amusing. I was lecturing bartenders in New Orleans 5 or 6 years ago, and this young man comes up to me, Stephen Joseph, and shows me a framed recipe, a set of recipes he has, all handwritten.
Yeah.
And he says, my great uncle was this guy, Christopher O'Reilly, who owned the Sazerac Corporation. And these are the recipes handwritten for bottled cocktails.
Mm.
There's a bottled whiskey
right.
cocktail, a bottled martini, a Manhattan, I think, on this paper. And the whiskey cocktail is Peychaud's bitters, Angostura bitters, rye whiskey, and a little bit of maraschino.
Huh.
There's no absinthe in it, but the
right.
absinthe you'd always put in as the
right.
final rinse. And this was their cocktail. You know, this was the Sazerac whiskey cocktail.
Yeah.
You know, that was the company. Because it turns out this guy O'Reilly ran the Sazerac bar in the 1910s.
Huh.
He was the bar manager
right.
at the place. So he knew everything. He knew the recipes. He knew the drink, you know. It's very funny. They kept that secret. I mean, what happens is in the 1880s, the Sazerac has two great bartenders at the Sazerac Saloon, Billy Wilkinson and Vincent Murray. And they're both local guys. Vincent Murray was actually Catalan. He was born, you know, near Barcelona. Billy Wilkinson is a native son of New Orleans. And they're both large guys and very gregarious mm-hmm. and very popular. And Murray is known as the guy who makes the best whiskey cocktail in New Orleans. Wilkinson evidently is also good at making whiskey cocktails. And Murray dies in 1903. At that point, Wilkinson's going around making Sazerac cocktails for business groups and stuff like that. And he gets credit at the time for inventing the Sazerac cocktail.
Unbelievable.
He's the guy.
Right.
You know, and he probably got it from Murray, and Murray is probably
yeah.
the guy who put the absinthe in and rinsed the glass. You know, but they were both partners in the bar, and Murray died very young. Wilkinson died soon after, but just in time to get credited as the guy who invented the Sazerac. It came out of that bar, you
right.
know. Later is the problem.
Yeah.
Because it happens in the 1880s, not the 1840s.
40s.
And it never had cognac in it. It was a Sazerac cocktail because it was made by the guys at the Sazerac.
Right.
And it was a Sazerac whiskey cocktail. And they had a range of bottled cocktails mm. because the Hublin guys in Connecticut at the Hublin Hotel in Hartford had gotten huge success in the early 1890s by bottling their standard cocktails and advertising them. And the Sazerac guys go, we could do that. And they do.
Right.
And this stuff is distributed nationally.
What's what?
And they've got a whole range of cocktails. They've got 5 or 6 Sazerac cocktails.
And that's the cutting edge now is bottled
yeah.
cocktails.
Yeah,
so what,
again,
what is new
back
is
to
old.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Sazerac, their bottled whiskey cocktail becomes by far the most popular, and that becomes the Sazerac cocktail.
Yeah.
So then people go to their bar and say, can we have a Sazerac cocktail? And they say, oh, well, I guess we'll give them a whiskey
right.
cocktail. So it gets in this feedback loop. But all that stuff is forgotten by the 1930s for the most part.
Right.
You know, when Stanley Clisby Arthur's looking into this. So he just puts two and two together and gets 16. Because he likes to blow things up a little.
Yeah. There's definitely a connection between New Orleans and absinthe, right? I mean, there's the old Absinthe House on Bourbon Street.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Brennan family at one point owns before they they start their restaurant, you know, and, you know, it's still there today. And, you know, even that anise flavor of absinthe, you know, can.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Continues on in New Orleans even after absinthe isn't available. You know,
Well, it's a popular Mediterranean thirst quencher,
right?
You know, and half the population of New Orleans comes from the Mediterranean,
right? And nobody realizes that there was a huge influx of Italian immigrants.
Yeah, all the Sicilians go there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to the point where, you know, there are all types of rumors about the Black Hand, and the locals are worried that all the immigrants are, you know, it's really ugly.
There are ethnic riots. It's horrifying. I mean, the whole mafia thing, the, you know, the Black Hand thing is always thrown up against these people. And they're just, you know, they're immigrants like anybody else. Right. They came there to do their work. And, you know, now they're entrenched in, it's part of New Orleans culture.
Absolutely. And you don't even realize, I mean,
you go to Mufaletta, like Mosca's.
The Mufaletta is essentially an Italian-American sandwich.
Yeah.
You walk into the central grocery market, and if you blindfolded me, I would think that I was on Arthur Avenue in the Bronx. You know what I mean?
That's right.
It's the same smells. It's those. Yeah. And what's funny is that people now associate the traditional Mufaletta with some kind of Creole New Orleans thing. It's nothing
Italian
to do
immigrants,
with that.
Yeah.
And the last vestige that you see is that central grocery market store, which is by the French Quarter, not too far from Bourbon Street. That part is right there. And I think that's where kind of the absinthe, what's the other one?
Well, also I would say, you know, Vincent Murray from Catalonia, you know, they drink a lot of absinthe there too.
Right.
Spain was always a big absinthe country.
Right.
And so he comes over there and he's like, let me just goose this up. I mean, absinthe was already being put into American cocktails in the 1880s. People would put a dash in. The thing that makes the Sazerac different is it's got more.
And there's that other one.
Ohen is
is also kind of in that same family.
Yeah, it's a Spanish anisette that's only popular in Spain and New Orleans.
Right, so it's like you get all of these interesting sort of licorice-flavored spirits. So it's like not a far jump that like some guy wants to spice up his old-fashioned, which is essentially the definition of a cocktail: spirits, water, sugar, ice, maybe bitters. Jazz it up by adding a little bit of absinthe or something else. People are trying, topping their old fashions with all types of things probably at some point.
Yeah, champagne included.
Champagne.
Which is
delicious. So it's not like a huge jump. And in some ways, it also makes sense because they might not even be advertising it. You know what I mean? Like it's like.
Yeah, it was just what they made. You know?
Right. Or just this is the guy's twist. You know, you go to your local deli and the guy puts something special on the sandwich. You know, he slips, you know, a slice of pastrami in with your, you know, whatever, your roast beef.
Nobody at the time pays that much attention.
Right. Or they just think that's it. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
It is a funny thing that it becomes this huge, you know...
Well, you know what happens, I think, is that by the 1890s, when it starts to catch on, this Sazerac cocktail, people had moved on to Manhattans from straight whiskey cocktails.
Right.
They'd moved on to martinis, Bronxes, absinthe frappes.
And a lot of those, the sweet vermouth and dry vermouth.
Yeah, and the drinks are just a little weaker.
Yeah.
They're a little more, I don't know.
Herbaceous.
Yeah, a little less elemental.
Yeah.
And then you taste a Sazerac, especially in New Orleans, where it's hot. And you've got this little, like, four sips of of cocktail. You know, it's not a big drink.
No, it shouldn't be.
And it shouldn't be because it's all booze.
Right.
And it just goes right to your head and you're like, God damn, that's a drink.
I'm awake.
You know? Yeah. Woo-hoo. I mean, do you remember your first Sazerac?
I think it was in New Orleans. I can't remember where, but it must have been there.
They didn't make it outside of New Orleans until pretty recently.
Yeah. Yours was down there, or was it?
No, mine, I had to make it.
I
went looking for it because I read about it and it sounded amazing. And I couldn't get the Peychaud's Bitters in New York. I couldn't get the absinthe. I finally made my own very bad absinthe. And
you couldn't get that either. It was banned in the U.S.
Yeah, it was banned in the U.S. So I had to make like kind of an infused version.
Which is very dangerous, by the way.
Yeah, don't do that.
You can now buy the real stuff in America. It's once again legal.
Yeah, this is, we're talking, this is the early 90s.
So just buy a bottle. And that's the crazy thing about absinthe. It's so expensive.
Yeah.
And most of the cocktails, you need just a few drops for a rinse, like in a Cork Survivor. Or
you can, always drink it in cold water, absolutely, which is delicious. But
it's true. You wrote the story just recently.
Yeah, so I couldn't find the Peychaud's Bitters anywhere in New York. People thought they had it, and I'd go to the store, and they didn't have it. And this was before the internet. You couldn't really order anything.
Yeah.
And so finally, I'd given up, and then my wife Karen was working for the great Larry Forjone, great American chef, and Larry's friend Emeril comes into Larry's restaurant, and Karen gets talking to him. She was the maitre d', and she was good at talking to people, and she eventually tells Emeril that we were looking for Peychaud's Bitters and couldn't find them up here. 2 days later, there's a FedEx package shows up at American Place where Karen was working, and it's got two huge bottles of Peychaud's Bitters. And boy, did we run home and make Sazeracs.
Yeah. Well, and Emeril certainly knew. I mean, he is a son of Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, but he's an adopted son of New Orleans for sure.
At 24, he became the egg chef at Commander's Palace, which is one of New Orleans' most famous
and
respected restaurants. And Ella Brennan, whose restaurant was, her daughter T told me that they were embarrassed because he was so young. So she was really happy when he like turned 30 or something, so Ella could finally tell people about their new rock star chef.
Oh, that's funny.
Who had kind of put them on the map, and he had followed in the steps of Paul Prudhomme, who was kind of a legendary figure in American cooking, and certainly for New Orleans, who kind of melded together Creole and I guess Cajun flavors together, which now we kind of see as one.
Yeah, but at the time they were very separate.
And nobody was really, it was all, just like everywhere else, it was all French chefs were running Antoine's and Arnaud's.
Yeah, the New Orleans food was not Galatois, spicy.
No, and it was really,
creamy, heavy butter.
And, the blackened, fish and all the spice mix and stuff. And so, like, really, Emeril comes out of that. So if anybody, knew New Orleans drinks and drinking, it's definitely Emeril, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. And so, that was my first.
You did have to yell BAM, though, when you made the drink.
Yeah. After
you added the
BAM came later after I had my third and hit the floor.
Exactly.
Whoa. Yeah. It's a hell of a drink. It's a hell of a ride.
I mean, the only good thing that I think comes out of that book and kind of this ridiculous story is that for decades, New Orleans sat on this cocktail and kind of protected it, like the supposed chicken guarding its cocktail cups, and sort of protected it and nurtured it. And when the rest of the country stopped drinking Sazeracs, you could still drink Sazeracs there, and it was something that they kept alive.
That's why I think of the Sazerac truly as a New Orleans cocktail. The fact that in Murray and Wilkinson, they were making improved whiskey cocktails. Right. The drink that's written up in Jerry Thomas, it's almost identical to the Sazerac. Sure. Same thing. But these guys gave it a name. They were personalities standing behind it. They featured it. It was at the most popular bar. It was their drink.
Yeah.
It was the drink that brought them to popularity and brought the bar to popularity or to new popularity. It was the drink that New Orleans rallied around because everybody else was drinking these weakling drinks, basically. And New Orleans is like, nah, that's not sporty.
No, that's not a drink.
We're New Orleans.
That's not a cocktail.
That's not a cocktail. Son, we got too much wine in that drink. I just want whiskey in mine. Maybe a little absinthe.
Right.
So, but that's the beauty to me. That's who owns a drink, the person who uses it.
We see that over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, it's often not the person, who invented the recipe, but yeah. really who popularized it.
The cocktail itself, the recipe goes back to London in the 1690s.
Right.
The English had it for over 100 years and didn't do jack shit with it. You know, and we bring it over here and we say, hey, you know, this is actually really good.
Right. And some ice.
We're going to give it this fabulous name, the cocktail.
Right.
And we're going to, you know, we're going to ice it. We're going to stir it up and we're going to have it before dinner every day, not just for a hangover.
Yeah.
We're going to have it in the afternoon when we're feeling good enough to really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So that's the important thing.
In some ways, that book, I think, is funny because, I mean, it is full of erroneous information, but it creates a whole mythology and a whole relationship between New Orleans and cocktails.
Yes.
In a way that, like, is fully embraced and becomes part of the fabric of New Orleans and that culture and society, which we sorely needed, you know, after World War II when so much cocktail history disappears. And you know,
New York had that in a million other books.
Yeah.
San Francisco kept the tradition alive, but they never really had the book to help them with it. Other cities never had that. You're right. I mean, that book made New Orleans the cocktail city. It preserved it as the cocktail city.
Absolutely.
Through the dark years, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you see it, all these stories pop up time and time again.
Yeah.
And even, you know, sustains New Orleans through a lot of these dark periods, you know, and gives them a sense of purpose because it's, you know, the supposed home, which...
As a historian, it might frustrate the hell out of me, but, you know...
As a drinker, though,
I'm very happy
they bought in.
Yeah, I'm happy to go and get a Sazerac at the... I like to get them at the Napoleon House or Two Jags
where they're
casual, you know?
And when the bartender is going on and on...
Yeah.
You just nod.
Yeah,
nod. That's our repayment that we just quietly nod and drink our Sazeracs.
My bartender, my old friend Paul Gustings, who started as my bartender and became my friend.
Isn't that always the way?
It's always the way. I knew I was going to like New Orleans the first time I was there. I'm having a Sazerac at Two Jacks, and he puts the absinthe in the glass, spins it around, and dumps it down on the floor. On the bar mat, you know, on the floor mat. And I'm like, okay,
yeah,
I like this.
Yeah. We're going to be friends.
We're going to be friends. Yeah.
You don't know it yet.
Yeah. But this is a town that really is for me.
Paul, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. You know, you can still get the Sazerac all over town and they still embrace it.
And you can get it at regular bars.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You don't have to go to a craft cocktail bar.
Yeah.
The Napoleon House is nobody's idea of a craft cocktail bar. They've got two drinks.
Yeah.
A Pimm's cup with ginger ale and a Sazerac.
Right.
And I always alternate them. You know, strict one after the other.
Sure, of course.
And I'll stay there all afternoon is the problem. Right. But anyway, on that alternation.
It'd be absurd to just order one. And
yeah,
not the other.
No, exactly. So Sazerac, then, you know. Then you back off on a Pimm's cup. Then you go, you know, I need something a little stronger.
Yeah.
I'm going back to the Sazerac. And they just make their Sazeracs normal.
Yeah.
They're delicious.
It's one of those things where it's such a good story that, like, I feel bad letting it go. You know what I mean? It's like, I you know, kind of, you know, we did a whole episode on Manhattan and Winston Churchill's mother. Mm. And also, thanks, Dave, that's not true either. But I still enjoy telling these stories, but with the note that it's a great story and this is what we believed and I wrote for many years. But as it turns out, thanks to Dave, it's not actually true.
Well, I hope
cocktails.
I always hope that you the true story, you know, you find different heroes.
Right.
You know, now there's like Billy Wilkinson and Vincent Murray.
Right.
Let's talk about them a little bit.
That's true.
You know,
that's
it's like, true. Let's find our own heroes.
Yeah.
There are always cool, amazing people involved. And I think if you're going to crush the stories on these things, I mean, you know, okay, history is history, you know. I always try my damnedest to find some other people.
Right. And dig
them up.
And of all places, New Orleans doesn't need to create history.
No.
There's so much history there.
It's all around
And there's so many characters.
Yeah.
And so many good stories and so many good drinking stories that, like, usually the truth is way more interesting and way more strange than fiction that's created.
Yeah.
So, you know. So when you're mixing up your Sazerac, you know, tip your hat to New Orleans for keeping such a wonderful drink alive and nurturing and, you know, it. And
tip your hat to Billy Wilkinson and Stanley Clisby Arthur.
Sure.
They're both great New Orleanians.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So pour a little off for both of them and hopefully...
Then have a third and pour a little off for Vincent Moret. And then you've got your three-bagger of Sazerac, right. Which is the perfect dose.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you should be fine.
You should be just fine.
For about 48 hours. Yeah. So we'll enjoy your Sazeracs and hope to see you at the Napoleon House.
We will clink our glasses.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.